Victor.
At the Races with Steve Bick.
And
horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Gulfstream Park, a very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 162, XM 207, Sports Zone 999. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Also, an online option. A really fun start to this Fountain of Youth week yesterday, and a busy 3 hours, but then I ended up spending the whole day here, which a lot of times, you know, I'll adjourn and go do whatever kind of work I need to do. Because usually when you're at the racetrack, you can't, I mean, you can't pretend, oh, I'm going to handicap. I'll get some handicap. No, it doesn't work, especially around here. And I'll tell you why. There are so many, snowbird, we should come up with a name, snowbird horse players. Got to come up with a better term. I'm going to work on that. Horse players that winter down here. But we got to figure in the horseplay angle to the moniker, all right? That's a project. Andy Simoff, who you know I think the world of and have so much fun with, Andy, you know, bopped in at the end of the show and said, come upstairs and sit. We got a table and 6:06, and so I thought, all right, I'll go after, you know, I'll go spend an hour at the, and of course they've got the, if you haven't seen the late, not a late post, but they've pushed the first post to 1:10 until further notice, and apparently that, you know, that's going to be the start time going forward. So anyway, I thought, okay, I'll spend a couple hours, I'll watch a few races and have some fun. Maybe some lunch, and it then becomes a parade of, you know, interplay, all kinds of, you meet people, and there's people you haven't seen. Joe Orsino hung out because Joe had a couple of horses to saddle, and we're going to, I think, hear from Joe this morning, and we will create, through the magic of telecommunications, Joe Orsino together with Tony Black. And if you, I don't know if they'll be able to offer you all of the hijinks and antics from over the years, the back in the day. But Joe and Tony together, Joe sitting here and Tony on the phone. So looking forward to that. But Joe was there. I met, Monica McGooey has been on the show a couple of times over the years, and I met her father, who I'd never met, Frank McGooey, who had a piece of closing argument. We talked about that great Derby season and the excitement and the fun they had with closing argument, and then everybody you meet has got, you know, you got common friends, and actually on that front, I we don't necessarily have official, this and that of At the Races. But I can make Bake Shack the official South Florida, you know, morning pastry shop of At the Races. And now, through meeting Charlie Ehrlich, who has been close to Chuck Simon for years, we now can make Dean's Gold the official gentleman's club at the races. There may be a market for this. Anybody that knows, what do they say? If you know, you know. I'm not known as the greatest marketing you know, aggressive marketer when it comes to advertising and such. But I've known of Charlie for years through Chuck, and he was sitting and introduced, this is Charlie, and then as the conversation starts to percolate, I think, wait a minute, I said, you're Chuck Simon's pal. He says, oh my God, yeah. And then Chuck's wedding comes up, which is probably, I guess Ron Anderson and Nancy's is up there, but Chuck Simon and Paula's wedding at Saratoga that summer is generally regarded as the greatest bacchanalia event in the history of Saratoga. And of course, that encompasses some, you know, some fairly elite company in that realm. So I had heard about Charlie for years, and I finally met him, Frank McGoey, who else? I mean, it's just, you know, it's a parade of, you know, stories. The stories come pouring out. And if you can bottle experiences like that, we could, I don't know. I'm not going to say solve all the game's problems, but we certainly, you know, we could certainly market the game, you know, very, very easily, because you just, there's so many funny aspects and the humor and the, you know, the camaraderie and the warmth, and it's an amazing experience, and you know, can't be recommended highly enough. And it's what, you know, it's what is infectious about the game. So that was my day yesterday, and I said to myself, because you know, today the opportunity to do the same thing again today is in the offing, but I've got work to do too. And speaking of work, let's get a little bit of work in here as we start to get involved. Brad Free is going to join us momentarily and update everybody on the situation. We'll talk to Brad first. Hammer is in route, and so we'll talk to Hammer in hour two and get whatever other updates are available. But the situation at Santa Anita, you know, people were waiting and watching for the overnight. And with the knowledge that the weather threat has potential to potentially postpone the big Saturday card with the big cap and the San Felipe, the Buena Vista is scheduled, the Kilroy, and entries were taken, and they're going to release an overnight, I think. We can get this from Brad. So I'll hold that for a second. And, you know, there was some shifting, you know, there's been some shifting entries, including Baffert with Nisos running potentially Saturday or Sunday in the San Felipe. Right now, the field of five was put together. So we'll let Brad do all that work. All right. And then we'll get an update from Hammer later. Also later, I've told you Joe and Tony, which should be fun. Tom Law as well in hour two, and hour three, busy hour three. Jeff Franklin will do some win using Thorograph. We'll look at races 13 and 14 here. I'll start to fold in the wild draw in New York yesterday, and as expected, almost overflow, 13 horses for the Gotham. it is really entertaining. David Aragona, who I've pestered for years. David Aragona is going to join us in hour three as well, and we'll do some Derby Watch. Actually, I guess we'll get both ends of Derby Watch with Brad on the front end and David later, but we'll do some Gotham advance work. And, you know, the Gotham may not be it's got Derby points, but, you know, because it's a one-turn elongated sprint scenario, It doesn't necessarily have to produce Derby horses. This is really, it's a really interesting race. Yesterday, of course, I went out on a limb to some degree with Just a Touch. Capital Idea of Clemence. I mean, if this was any other configuration, the 13, you would think, but it no harm, you know, the long stretch, you know, before the turn for a one turn mile. So he looks serious. Cox's other horse, actually, the Liam's Map, Bergen's okay in here. This is going to be a lot of fun. Deterministic as well as Clemente starts to unleash the 3-year-olds of his that, you know, people kind of been waiting and watching for. Pletcher, Canate. So we'll do that with David Aragona. Looking forward to that. And Rich Ang as well later. And I got to do some recapping from yesterday as well. And I've actually, there's a couple of good races that jumped at me for today. New York and down here. There's a very good maiden turf race and also at Fairgrounds. Let's get Brad in here, and we'll catch up quickly on you know, the latest from Brad's perspective. Brad Free joining us, and yesterday, you know, those of us that wait for overnights like you know, red-tailed hawks on a telephone pole, we were waiting until you let us know what was happening. Brad, good morning.
Is the most important document that comes out of any racetrack. And of course they drew yesterday, but they were waiting until today to release the overnight. And we expect a decision sometime this morning regarding the Saturday card. Obviously, Saturday is one of the biggest days of the Santa Anita Winter Meet with the Santa Anita Handicap, the Grade 1 Kill Row, the San Felipe, and the Buena Vista. But the decision by Santa Anita officials whether to run the race Saturday or postpone the race, the entire card, will we expect later this morning. I will say this, the weather forecast does not look good at this stage of the game. It was actually sprinkling this morning, which I was a little surprised to see. But the rain is expected to arrive on Friday, late Friday, and go all the way through late Saturday and possibly even into Sunday morning. So it's been a wet winter out here in California, and, you know, Santa Anita has taken the brunt of it. It's been kind of an unfortunate season. But we're awaiting word from Santa Anita, and as when I spoke with the officials yesterday, Nate Newby, the general manager and vice president, said that they expect to make an announcement one way or another early Thursday morning. So we're kind of on standby. The card has been drawn, and whether it's run on Saturday or Sunday remains to be seen. But a lot of uncertainty this winter in California and this week pending the announcement regarding the big cap card.
Why don't we quickly familiarize everybody with whenever this is going to be run, a glance at particularly the big cap and the San Felipe.
Yeah, the Santa Anita Handicap drew a field of 7, and the horse that I expect will be the favorite, Newgrange, he's already won back-to-back graded stakes at this meet. I don't think post position is a big deal in a mile and a quarter race, but you couldn't have asked for a better draw by Newgrange. He's drawn outside in a field of 7. He has tactical speed, so he can go to the lead or he can sit, whatever jockey Victor Espinoza wants to do. And after watching Newgrange work this last weekend under Espinoza, he's going to fire. Newgrange will fire a big shot on whether it's Saturday or Sunday remains to be seen. He's got that pace pressing style. The question is, can he go a mile and one quarter? And the way that he worked the other day and the way he's been running of late, I don't see any reason why he won't get the distance. But there are some other good horses in the field, including an interesting chipper from the Midwest trained by Brad Cox, a horse named Highland Falls. He's by Curlin out of Breeders' Cup Distaff winner Round Pond. He's making his graded stakes debut in the Santa Anita Handicap, but his numbers stack up with anyone else in the field. He drew post number two, he'll be among the leading contenders. So here's the field, Steve, from the inside out, starting with post position number one: Reincarnate, Highland Falls, Mixtoe, Salesman, New Gate, Subsanador, and New Grange. And New Grange is the Phil D'Amato trainee ridden by Espinosa that I expect will be expected to go favored, although there's going to be a lot of support for Highland Falls as well. It's, you know, it's a good, solid, big-cap field. It's kind of what we've become accustomed to as, you know, races like the Pegasus and the Saudi Cup and the Dubai World Cup have kind of drained some of the quality out of the handicap division out in California. But a very good, solid, competitive group of older horses going a mile and a quarter, and that will be race eight on either Saturday or Sunday. We'll see.
Well, hoping for, and I think a decision, just heard from Hammer too, decision maybe in about 90 minutes or so, sooner than later. And of course, it's 6:15 on the West Coast. So, Brad, I appreciate it. I've got David Aragona joining me later, so I got both ends of Derby Watch this morning. If I could have melded you together, you got to get into that pithy head to head the way Priv and Watch used to do it. You got to.
Well, that's one style of doing it. I kind of. Right. I think if people want comedy and satire, they can, you know, put on an entertainment channel. I'm more about providing information. But regarding the three-year-old, Steve, just a quick update on the San Felipe. There, a field of five entered the San Felipe.
Yeah.
And kind of a surprising, at least to me anyway, entry of Nysos.
Yep.
Is in field, trained by Bob Baffert. He's the best three-year-old in the country. It's unfortunate that Churchill Downs extended the ban of his trainer, Bob Baffert, and Nysos is ineligible to run in the Kentucky Derby, but there are a lot of other good races out there. Nysos has entered in the San Felipe. I have not spoken with Baffert in the last couple of days, so I'm not sure what his plans are. He also entered Wind Me Up and Imagination, and then the two non-Bafferts in the San Felipe are Scatify, a very good, promising three-year-old trained by John Sadler, and a maiden by the name of McVeigh trained by John Sheriff. So Baffert, he's pretty much has a hammer lock on the three-year-old division. In fact, it's been going on for years, but I think every graded stakes race for this full crop starting last summer, except for the Breeders' Cup, has been won by a Baffert trainee, and I expect that trend to continue this weekend. But Nysos, he's a cool horse. He's won all three starts by more than a combined margin of more than 27 lengths, and he's entered in the San Felipe, and we'll find out more about him. The other two grass stakes races, graded stakes, scheduled for Saturday are the Grade 1 Kill Row, in which Du Jour and Easter will be among the favorites. Now, one or the other, I think, is going to go favored, but we'll see about that. That's the Grade 1 Kill Row. It's scheduled to be run on grass, and the course is going to be wet. So we'll find out more about that. And then the other graded stakes race is the Buena Vista for fillies and mares at a mile on grass. That's scheduled to be the final race on a 10-race card. And I think that Ruby Nail, off a tough, tough trip down in Florida, is going to be among the favorites. I think there's a field of 11 entered in the Buena Vista. Yeah, a big field, and nine entered the Kill Row. So both graded stakes races on grass this weekend drew big, deep fields. Ruby Nail, I think, is the horse to beat in the Buena Vista. That's race 10, and race number 7 is the Kill Row, with Du Jour and Easter among the prominent contenders. And then, of course, you got Goliad with his blazing speed and stretch out sprinter. Good races.
It sounds fabulous, and I did happen to see that XBTV made the Ruby Nell the work of the day the other, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, and she was the talk coming out of the action down here, Pegasus weekend. So, Ruby Nell, we're not going to get the price, I think, obviously, that Yeah, that happened earlier. You know, you talk about Nisos in the San Felipe, and perfect segue to just mention the Preakness future wager came out yesterday. Nisos, the 4-1 favorite, as you might imagine.
Yeah, he deserves to be the favorite for that race. I don't think that 4-1 is a fair price on a race that's, you know, months down the road. Too many things can happen to take 4-1. But if you had to make a selection right now, he would certainly be the one. And he's arguably the most popular 3-year-old in the country. He's an exciting horse. He would be the favorite in the an individual favorite in the Derby future wager. He was eligible, but he's not, and there you have it. So, but he's a fun horse. He's a fast horse. He's a good horse, and there's going to be plenty of races down the road for Nisos to run in, other than a 20 horse, Kentucky Derby.
Well, Derby watch continues, and of course, Brad covering that portion of the 3-year-old action nationally, and then locally you've got the horses to watch that Brad keeps track of, and one horse, Brad, I know you got to go, but you got to mention the 4-year-old of Mark Glatz from the weekend.
Judge Miller.
Judge Miller.
A good horse. I mean, it was not a fluke either. He won by 11 lengths in 35 and change. He earned a 105 buyer speed figure that's tied for the highest figure so far this year. I know it's early in the year still. It was his first route race. They were smoking on the front end, and Frankie Dettori, who rode the horse for trainer Mark Glatt, he told Glatt after the race, "I kept waiting for this horse to get tired, and he just kept on running." It was a fast win over a modest allowance field, but he ran like a stakes horse, and Glatt has held this horse in high regard for some time. He's a full brother to Clarier, I believe, multiple grade yes. one winner. Yeah, and he's a good horse. He's a lightly raced 4-year-old. That was his first route, his third career start, and we're going to be hearing a lot from Judge Miller, I would hope, if he stays together. So very exciting older prospect that's kind of – I don't think he's under the radar anymore, not after a 105 buyer winning by 11, but he's untested so far against graded stakes quality horses. That – opportunity will come sooner rather than later. Very good horse, Judge Miller, son of Curlin, trained by Mark Glatt.
Well, Brad's horses to watch column is always fruitful and clip and save, as they say. Brad, I appreciate the update, and we'll hope to reach you tomorrow to handicap in earnest, whether they're running Saturday or Sunday.
That sounds great. I look forward to it.
Brad Free, everybody. Brad Free won on your Twitter machine, and I do see where people are saying, "Well, where's the card? Where's the over?" It was made very clear yesterday that they were waiting, because the difference is obviously if they are going to run Sunday, they can they can take the card intact. If they have to move this and spread things out, then a redraw is possible. So that's the thought process behind waiting to reveal the overnight, because if they're not going to use the card Sunday, should they postpone, then they're not releasing it, and they'll come back with a redraw for next week. We'll get that portion of the equation from Hammer, and he says meetings are going to happen here presently, and as soon as there's a decision, he will send up a flare, and we'll get Hammer probably in about an hour and 15 minutes. Pat Cummings is going to join us. I'm going to catch up with Pat on a couple of topics. Jason Blewett just wandered by, Jason's a permanent snowbird. A transplant, I guess, right? You can't call somebody that doesn't go back to New York or the Northeast. They're not snowbirds. He's fully migrated after, of course, his long stint here and now with West Point, and he's gonna swing back by. I'm glad I thought of this, I got to send Joe O a quick text. All right, and then I'll give you some of the some of yesterday's stuff. Here, heads up, Joe. All right. So he's still good for 10. All right. And you know, we haven't talked to Tony, so got to catch up with Tony Black. Yesterday, Seth. Good job by Seth. I wonder if he's going to wander through here this morning as well. He arrived last night. Seth hit that pick four yesterday, and unfortunately, you had one too many favorite, that QF 75 in the nightcap. This ended up being a short number, $46, and it was a $48 play, so it didn't come off. However, he used two horses in that nightcap, and it was the favorite at just under even money that won and paid $380. Zatip was his other horse and was over 3-1 would have paid, pick four would have paid $200 under that scenario. But he had a nice, he had that $8 winner, Princess Tenko, in the eighth, and he had, actually, it was a good price in the second leg, I think it was, right? Yeah, the wire job, King Miano for Kathleen O'Connell, paid $11.20. But you had an even money winner in the first leg as well, Managing Mischief. So Seth had everybody that you needed, and he was covered, had there been one more upset, and particularly in the nightcap. I mean, this could have easily gone into the $200 range or better. So good job. At least, you're better off cashing it than trashing it. Last night, I was watching it. I was watching Turfway. I wanted to tie in after, by the way, when I had a really fun dinner last night, Dave Joseph and I were supposed to go, we did go, to this Greek Islands, which everybody raves about and been around for a long time. One of Fort Lauderdale's not just, best Greek restaurant, but, regarded as one of the best places in Lauderdale, period. And I'm just packed. And I very much like the occasional foray into Greek food. So we're sitting and just getting started, and Tom Padula wanders through. He thought he was going to sneak a seat at the bar, and it's a good thing that we had a table that was big enough for, they gave us a foretop on a corner, so there was room for a third, and so Tom Padula sat in as well. We had a really fun time, the Saganaki. The flaming cheese on the sizzling platter, right? Ugh, unbelievable. That's from Greek town in Chicago. If you love it. So anyway, I had a really nice time with last night. Had to slip that in. Anyway, so I got back, and the timing was perfect to watch the late action from Turfway, and. Well, for starters, there was a nice price, one of the nice prices that Caitlin went after, Miracle on Ice, just arrived too late trying to get to a loose leader at that point. Mutakatif for Paul Brown at 42-1. Unbelievable. 85-66 for the winner, and Miracle on Ice and Sonny Leone arrived just a little too late in the mile and a quarter event at 13-2. So maybe some people bet Miracle on Ice. If you back wheeled The Exacta paid $518. It's funny. The favorite was third, Presider. What'd the Tri pay here? $1,247 for 50 cents. So, that's Turfway. And then in the feature, they both were pretty much features. The idea to go a little bit against the favorite was a good idea. Curl Girl, was, you know, kind of laboring early, started to grind it out and got beat by, the 8-1, Brendan Walsh, the Connect mare for, Forever After All. This one, a Dixiana homebred, 5-year-old out of the Wonder. In fact, this is a nicely bred mare, out of Julia Tuttle. So, in fact, I think Brendan won a couple, right? Yeah, I think he won one earlier too, I think. No scores at Turfway last night, but it's fun to look at their cards. It's these big full fields, and you know, you can dig one up. You'll get paid. There's no two ways about that. There was a maiden. It was a good maiden race because as I was between races, I was Paula Lobo for Besalu. It's great to have Besalu back in action. You know, made a big splash on the scene, and of course Royal Delta. Then paired back. But now, you know, seems to be wading into the action. First time starter, Ultimate Ready, a more than ready out of the Unbridled Songmare Ultimate Reward. Here's the other Brendan Walsh. Sheer won as well. Now, that was in the sixth as the second choice. So, two-win night for Brendan Walsh. All right, Turfway. Let's get perfect timing. And I just got, and Joe Orsino just confirmed he's all set. So, we're going to have some fun with Joe in person. And, of course, Hades is preparing for the Florida Derby. Joe's also got a maiden in a race here today that caught my eye. We'll find out about that. I'm pretty sure was a sibling, had some sibling strength. All right, so keep going. Let me get Pat and he's apparently at O'Hare laying over. So the timing is perfect. And you know we don't want Pat Cummings to be bored. It's important. It's important that Pat is thinking, talking, acting on the industry every moment you're awake, and then dreaming about things at night.
It does feel like that at times, Steve. But you know, this is the life we choose. So
let me also slip in a piece of news that Mike Welch in the last half hour. We were awaiting a decision from the Windstar camp, and the puffs of smoke have come out of the chimney. Elliot Walden, although I shouldn't associate Elliot with with the Vatican. oh my God! The jokes write themselves, Pat.
Some days, I tell you.
Speakeasy will run in the Fountain of Youth. All right. So Speakeasy, who had been considered for the Friday allowance, they will opt for a Fountain of Youth try on Saturday, drawing the rail. And they said they wanted to get first start around two turns and so forth. So mile and a 16th, et cetera. And I mean, it makes sense, I guess. Pat, I'm reaching out to you because we have not spoken and yet this year, actually. And there's obviously a bunch of things going on that I want your input and updating. I did have Mike Rapoli on that Friday that came the week of, I mean, every week there's some other brush fire, or at least a topic of concern and interest. And then there's been subsequent, a number of subsequent interesting developments. You were on hand Monday for the Light Up Racing kickoff event. And yesterday, Bo Bromigen joined me for about 45 minutes. I am really impressed with the concept and with the execution. And I think it's important to make people understand why this can work and what is really valuable about it. And it fits in with, you know, your project.
It does, and thanks for the chance to talk about that. I've been very impressed with it as well. I was there at Phasig on Thursday, on Monday, but had spoken with those who were involved with it for the past few months. Knew this was somewhat on the cusp, and Price Bell, Jason Lick, Roderick Lockman, and Dr. Burke, and the entire team that are behind it, and really the person who I've probably known the longest of all of it is Vicky Leonard from Australia, herself a Kiwi, but have known her for years and been so impressed by the work that she has done in Australia that would bring us kind of back around to this. And it was really just sort of, it was begging for America to have a version. And so when I heard that Vicky was involved after her great work with the Kick Up program in Australia and raising greater awareness, really amongst all industry organizations, participants, stakeholders, from farms and breeders to trainers to all the associated organizations across the sport, that this could be something that really the industry rallies around and is used as a base of essentially communicative operations. Let's call it modern responses, intelligent responses to those that might want to criticize the actions of the sport or have strong responses to scientific questions, frequently asked questions that I think, the joke would be that a lot of people get at cocktail parties and family events and just in the normal course of life when someone finds out what you do and in what circles you're moving. Oh, really? I saw this happen or I saw that happen. And how one is best to respond to that. That is what this is about. That is what Light Up Racing is about. And putting some, not just the science, but really the communication strategy, the media training behind it to better educate and better communicate on behalf of the entire industry. And it's, frankly, Steve, I think you would wholly agree, it's been a long time coming.
What's valuable about this is there's tools here, Pat. This is not a feel-good, not a feel-good defensive posture. I'm not trying to disparage anything that's come before. But this is a public relations, execution that puts answers and, a template for support. And, whether it's horsemen, whether it's the general public, to talk to their friends, to answer any, if it's mainstream media, when those occasions arise. I mean, this is something that has been overdue. And, I would like to know that, industry organs are going to sign on and put those specific tools in their hands.
Yeah.
In people's hands.
It's I think it's almost like a combination of offense and defense, right? When someone comes at you with a question that I think a lot of industry participants may want to either cower from or get very defensive. It's about having a good, productive answer that says, hey, we're not hiding from the situations that exist within the sport. We're not hiding. We're here to promote the good work that we're doing and have done and have done, frankly, for a very long time and continue to improve upon. And putting organizational structure behind that. Look, realistically, to your point about whatever may or may not have come before, I think most people would agree, it probably hasn't worked or worked well enough, right? So there's every reason to organize it better and to move forward. And that is what the team here has done. And if you were to go, and look, I'm not speaking on behalf of the Light Up Racing team, but just as an interested industry participant and someone who knows the people involved and went and supported the event, I'm impressed with what I've seen and what I've heard. And if you go to lightupracing.com, I mean, they already have common questions. And it is a laundry list of just about everything that anyone in racing has probably heard or seen from someone at some time, and a pretty darn good answer for it. And that's just kind of the front door approach to this. But I think the much more meaningful long-term benefit is in proactive communications, how to respond when incidents occur, particularly around forthcoming items of note, the Triple Crown coming up, the undoubted New York Times-related documentary, which is very likely, I think, to tread over all the past incidents and discussions of recent months and years. And I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of new information coming out. It's just going to be a regurgitation of all the things we've known and seen and heard. But having coordinated response, organized response, and not being ashamed of our business.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is an industry. There has been a consistent improvement in many phases of the business over time. The business has evolved. It's just that maybe the communications infrastructure hasn't evolved. Right? If we went back 30 years, the TRA, the Thoroughbred Racing Association of North America, had a communications office that was proactively dealing with mainstream media, radio programs, getting placement, responding to mass media questions about the sport. That went away. It got consumed under the NTRA and gradually faded away. And that was essentially all happening as the internet was really coming into being. And I don't think the industry, you know, has caught up to it. And while there's different organizations that could have been doing it, you know, it's almost like blame is no longer an option, right? Action and proaction is really the only option to get people moving for the sport. And I'm encouraged by it. They're going to have another event at Keeneland on Tuesday, I think 5 o'clock again, if memory serves. But check out the Light Up Racing website or their social media presence. And I'm sure there'll be more information there, but they've indicated that it's going to be a little bit more functional, whereas this first briefing was generally more high-level overview, why we're doing this, the way it's being done, and what people can expect. This next session coming up at Keeneland on Tuesday will be a little more functional. For those taking part. And I think the goal after this seems to be to put cohorts of industry participants together, right? Communications arms from the farms, from industry organizations, get them a collective training, right? It's not just, I saw someone reference this on social media. I thought it was apt, right? It's not just the representative of the AAEP. It's not just Dr. Bramble, right? Every person in this sport is in some way, shape, or form has the capacity to be an ambassador to friends, to family, to their overall social network. And we just need to be doing it better and doing it consistently and with the right information. And it's really hard to be against it. I think it's been high time that it's been put together, and fair credit to all those as part of the team that have done it, and I'm very supportive.
Now, getting the tools in people's hands is really the next step, one of the reasons I focused on this yesterday with Bo and wanted you to comment on it because it fits right into the mechanics of what you and what Mike Rapoli have floated, and we can segue a little bit to that. But the key is for people to understand that this is not just some feel-good idea. It's actual, a mechanical response that professional businesses employ on a daily basis. And it's something that, is way overdue for the industry. Let's get some thoughts, Pat. We talked about the introductory elements in December when we were together at Symposium. Bring everybody up to speed and also some of your thoughts on the recent topics that have bubbled to the surface, as it were.
I have been remarkably engaged with a variety of industry organizations and groups to talk about how we can move forward and significantly improve the sport. We've been trying to basically taking these 4 months to determine what will the National Thoroughbred Alliance be? How will it evolve? I've enjoyed some of the speculation from some that, where's the plan? Where are the specifics? I mean, you don't just miracle this stuff, Steve, right? I mean, it took us 30 years to get into this to this state. We're not going to solve the problems or have the exact methods or strategies to emerge from them. We've laid out kind of what we believe are the key pillars in a variety of industry interviews, and we'll continue to do so and to get people aware of the need to focus on certain areas, right? Horse ownership overlies every facet of the sport. There's just no question about it. The horse owner is going to touch so many areas of the sport. But getting an improvement in things like aftercare, in the racing offices and the racing product, in the sales arena, in the wagering space, with the PR and marketing arm of the sport, with education and outreach initiatives, within the horsemen's community, within support for horsemen, for not just an improvement in facilities, but an improvement in life and lifestyle for horsemen. These are all things that need to be worked on. And collectively, there is not one organization that is trying to galvanize support in all these areas and move everybody forward. You're bringing everybody together. And Mike and I certainly share the belief that might be something that we can do. And I can assure you that while it isn't necessarily public and we aren't, out there on Twitter promoting every conversation that has been had, there have been countless over the last 3 to 4 months with a variety of different industry organizations to say, how can we move this forward together? What initiatives can we pursue together? How can we get groups that we're not talking? I'll just anecdotally, without mentioning the groups involved, but I received 2 phone calls last week from different stakeholders in the sport who reached out and said, I heard from a person at another organization, and I have not heard from that person in a very long time. We might not have had the greatest relationship with that organization, but I just have to tell you, I get the impression that the only reason I'm hearing from them is because of the conversations and the dialogue that you and Mike are driving. And it's fantastic. It's great. It doesn't translate into direct action or a direct statement that I can come out and say, these 2 people are now talking to each other and they weren't before, because we're having conversations with all of them and trying to identify ways to move forward and to be better. And those will get clearer over time. And there's a couple areas, Steve, that I've been very involved in these past few months that I'll tell you, I have not previously been all that involved with professionally within the sport. One of those is the aftercare space. And the amount of engagement I've had with different organizations there, really across the sport, top to bottom, individuals, kind of one-on-one in some group settings, it's been fantastic. And trying to wrap our heads around how we can substantially increase the funding that goes into those really incredibly important initiatives, not just for caring for the horses, but actually increasing their value to their post-racing owners. And, you know, even that word itself, aftercare, it has a certain connotation that, you know, when a horse is done racing, it's almost like there's a nursing home component to it. And it really is so much more than that. And it's really kind of surprised me that we've stuck with that word and held on to it for as long as we have. Certainly there is a component of that to it, but it is so much more. It is about preparing horses for secondary careers. It is about a vibrant secondary marketplace for our horses, whether they be moving into the dressage space or hunter jumpers or trail riding, or maybe they do need some additional rehab when they're done racing and understanding how horses can be placed. It's a massive effort. There's some tremendous people involved with it, and we really want to move that forward and elevate it and probably secure some much more substantial regular funding sources, right? This needs to be so much more than a coordinated set of fundraisers. It needs to be bigger, and we're starting to talk and ponder over what might be able to be done at a much bigger level in that space. That's really just a sliver of some of what we've been doing and talking about, and it's been great to hear so many in the industry kind of coming out and being much more open about the need for change, about what they've done and what they can continue to do. It's been very encouraging for Mike and I in these past couple months, and we hope it's going to continue.
Pat, and of course, the reason you were an ideal resource for an initiative, you know, like this, because it in a lot of ways it's a continuation of what you were doing with Craig Burnick and the Idea Foundation. You made the point in December that there was going to be something of a different approach to, you know, the projects that you undertook, you know, with TIF. In terms of obstacles, I mean, where do we envision obstacles to, and I'm talking generally, but you can use specifics to answer, I suppose. You know, where are the obstacles coming from, and you know, what barriers would be easiest to remove to get objectives achieved?
Yeah. The good thing is, so far, Steve, no one's saying no, right? We haven't gotten a no yet. And those no's could certainly come. But to this point, everyone's still picking up the phone. They're responding to the emails. And they are engaged in good conversation. But it's going to be when we actually try to push and identify the specific plan to execute in some of these areas. We've got some of these projects along in the aftercare space. We've got some in the racing space, got some on the PR side of the sport. When it comes down to it and say, all right, now, like, we need a commitment. We need to move forward. You need to partner with us on this. Like, this needs to be happening. You know, are people then going to start back off and say, yeah, maybe that's not the way we want to do it. Or maybe we don't want to do it with you. There's not going to be a lot of tolerance for that. And I think that with Mike's involvement in all of this, that really is the goal of driving the engagement through social media, that a lot of people can look at it and say, oh, this is just, this is Mike, you know, kind of just flying off the handle on Twitter. Look, that did not happen 5 months ago. This has been a strategy. The engagement is important. We need people to realize that the way in which we've done things was only good for so much up until now. It cannot be the way we continue to operate as a sport going forward. It has to be better. It has to be different. And I think that that is really at the heart of all of these engagements that we're having, that while no one has said no yet, we don't want people to ever really say no. We want people to say, yes, we need to find a better way to increase field size in our races. We need to find a way to increase handle in our races. We need to find sources, better or guaranteed sources of funding for aftercare initiatives, and not just for the facilities themselves, but for the entire marketplace of horses in their post-racing career. We need to elevate that to a much bigger level. And it is these sorts of things that are bringing, or I think will bring, hope and change to the sport that it is in desperate need of. But, you know, where the... There's not much tolerance for hurdles, right? There's not much tolerance for no. Because if we get that, you know, people are going to know about it, right? That entities or organizations didn't necessarily want to play ball. And I will just say that in my own personal conversations, I'm not finding that. I am not getting that resistance. And I don't want that to be, you know, people placating you for now, and that they will try and come back and wheel around you at some point in the future. Because, again, that's not what this is about. You know, we really, really, really need to change. And it's going to take time. But I don't think failure is an option here, Steve. People have asked me, why did you take up this opportunity to work with someone like Mike? I mean, put all of his business success aside, Mike has an incredible passion for the sport, and he doesn't have a lot of tolerance for not getting things accomplished. So, you know, I thought it was an incredibly exciting opportunity to work with him, and it has not let me down so far. I can assure you of that. It is, it's been incredibly energizing, and the feedback early on has been great. But people should not fret about the lack of a step-by-step plan that has come to the fore. We have a strategy that we're executing, but it is going to take time to get to the point of, you know, here's exactly what's happening, point A, point B, point C. And the conversation and the dialogue around that, I think, is totally understandable. People are desperate for change, right? People are, you know, if you love this sport, you want it to be better. And we all have felt a tremendous amount of negativity, particularly, say, in the last 5-10 years, that the sport has not been elevated to the level that it should. And we all want it to be better. And having someone like Mike Rapoli behind this, I think, is energizing for the entire sport.
Anxious to hear more, and as things, you know, coalesce. I know better than to, you know, to ask for some specifics this minute. And
I appreciate that. Look, it is, I heard something somewhere, and someone was basically saying, like, you know, Mike hasn't really shown a seriousness to kind of knuckle down on this. Like, well, you know, I hear this and I'm thinking, like, I'm involved. Like, this is my day to day. I'm engaged in all these amazing conversations of trying to work with industry organizations to find a way to make some improvements. And, I felt that as a really unnecessary needle into the works. Just because it's not on paper set in stone doesn't mean it's not happening behind the scenes. So the time and the patience is much appreciated. I'm overwhelmingly excited by what could be accomplished based on the conversations that are currently being had. I really feel momentum, and I feel as though Mike's, his engagement has really helped bring some people out into the open that may not have been there before, and feel a willingness to speak and to be a little bit more open and to talk about the need to improve the sport. That is helpful. And we just need to keep it going.
Well, exactly. Consistency and you know, the pressure, and when it comes to this light up racing concept, having a consistent message, that'll go a long way. Chinese water torture or how, you know, water dripping on a rock will eventually make an indentation. Yeah. But that's what this is about. It's about keeping pressure and keeping, you know, a consistent effort. And, you know, there's been, you know, way too many fits and starts, essentially.
Yeah, and don't forget, you know, my experience for 5 years with TIF, you know, it takes a while to get that snowball rolling downhill to get the momentum that you need to get certain things accomplished. And you need help along the way. But we are undoubtedly parlaying my past experience in that role, working on what I'll call some smaller level projects that could have, you know, a substantial impact, to a much bigger focus overall the sport, right? I mean, about 6 months after TIF was announced, the first of the white papers was released, right? That was one paper on one topic, which later ended up driving legislative change 4 years later, right? So yeah. That's what we got from petty breakage. And the next white paper, you know, it took another 3.5 years before Oklahoma became the first state to adopt Category 1 and move in that direction. So we're doing this at a bigger level over really, you know, all of the sport's major institutions as opposed to kind of individual projects. And undoubtedly it's going to take time. Undoubtedly it seems amorphous at present, but we're working on it, and I really do appreciate the support, Steve.
Pat Cummings, everybody, and we look forward to every conversation with Pat. Pat, safe travels. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Steve. See ya.
Pat Cummings. We'll take a break here, top of the hour. Joe Arsino, look at you wearing how do I get an Andy Simoff horse van?
Thousands of dollars.
Of transport. Whenever Andy carries one of our horses, he gives me a nice deal, so I don't...
Stop getting deals, and you'll get a sweatshirt.
I think I like the deal. Although the sweatshirt is very... The black and the red, it's... Well, that's your colors too, right? Black and red.
Red and white.
Red and white. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Joe Arsino is here. You know what horse we're going to... We got Tony Black coming up momentarily. I'm going to call Tony. It's going to be a riot. I got to dig this picture out at home. You know who I loved of yours? Do I have this right? Have I ever talked to you about Thunder Blitz?
Thunder Blitz, yes. Yes.
Right?
I remember you talking about it one day. You were interviewing Baffert about Point Given. And some of his races, and when he was fifth in the Derby, yep, and he said, you got beat by Thunder Blitz, and Baffert was like, who the hell's Thunder Blitz?
Invisible Ink. Inky's the one. I used Thunder Blitz. Had the top five horses in that Derby, came away with nothing.
Right.
Joe Arsino's here. We're going to get Tony Black on the line. It'll be a panic. Back after this.
XM Radio.
PA Bred, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Carabelle in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none. The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
If you're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the